Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffy Kennedy, author of Epic Fantasy Romance. Romantasy. I might change it to Romantasy. I'm going to talk about that. Today is Say It With Me, People. Oh, wait. Sorry. And you started to say it too, didn't you? Wait. I'm here with my first cup of coffee. I got all distracted by the Romantasy thing. Ah, and it truly is my first sip. How could I have forgotten? All right. Now, today is, you can really say it with me, take a deep breath, it is Friday, woohoo, March 22nd. Sorry for that false alarm there. Do any of you do yoga? You know, like in yoga class, there's the whole thing where you, at the beginning, you're all going to say om together three times, you know, and so it's like, it's kind of at your own pace, but also you want to do it with everyone else because you don't want to be oming too soon or too late. Although there are those people who like have to show how long they can draw out the om. If you do yoga, I think you will feel me on this one. But yeah, you know, it's like the say it with me. You have to do the whole, you know, like you are in your yoga class and you've aligned and you're clearing your mind and keeping your word in mind and all of these things. And you take your deep breath and you're ready to let it out in the om. But like, then it's, the teacher hasn't done it yet. And you're like, is it just me? It could be just me. Ah, so, happy Friday. Clearly I am perkier today than I thought. It's been a good week for me. I finished First Order of the Fey Realms. Yep, I finished it on Tuesday. I even figured out the ending, in part with help from my dear friend, Kelly Robson. She said the right thing at the right time. Doesn't always work. Totally worked this time. So yeah, that was great to get done. Sent it off Tuesday to Agent Sarah, and she wants to give it a full read. So she'll get back to me like around mid-April, I think. So that was great to get out. And now I have started Reluctant Wizard. I have like 1500 words on it so far for the last couple of days. One of the things I've been thinking about is that could be that my brain is aging. Don't say it's not so. But also, I mean, I've written a lot of books at this point, and I need to stop creating new worlds and new magic systems, people. I'm going to say that I need to do this knowing full well that I'm not going to do this. But some of it is having written in three different worlds and magic systems in the last 4 months, switching over to this one, even though it's a well-established world, it's set up in the Bonds of Magic world. It was a little much. I could just kind of hear my neurons creaking as they like. It's probably a bad metaphor, but I'm sort of imagining them like sending the, it's like one of those mine shaft deals, right? You know, like with the conveyor belt and the buckets that go down and like they're dipping the buckets back down into, what is this? You know, and it like needs to be oiled and all of this. Dredging up the rules for this world, because I started to write something in there that I realized was from the world of Never the Roses. Speaking of Never the Roses, I have some super exciting news. Super exciting. Yoo-hoo! And I'm going to explain a little bit about how the industry works here too. Because it's surprising to me how many people don't know this. So I got the memo that from the assistant editor, Deanna, she sent me this memo that they are sending to the art department on how to create the cover. And she wanted to make sure, she sent it to me and Agent Sarah, and wanted to make sure that we were good with everything that was in that memo. And so in there, I saw the super exciting news that I feel like I need a, they're going to release it in hardback. Hardback, people. Hardback. Hardback. So this is really cool. This is super exciting news. They're asking for a cover for a hardback book. Oh, and let me tell you what else they said in there. They said this really cool thing. Hang on. So this is how they described it for the art department. I mean, they had all these other descriptions too, explaining, you know, like theme and all of this, but this is the super cool part. They said, breakout hit. This is a new darker direction for celebrated romantasy author, Jeffy Kennedy. This is the debut of her pen name and the first of her books that is decidedly not a happy ever after. We could talk about that. Significant hit potential. Let me repeat that. Significant hit potential in the new ravenous romanticy readership. We'll talk about the term romanticy in a moment. But significant hit potential. So, I mean, you know, nothing's set in stone. Things can change. But the fact that they are doing a hardback cover is, it's the top. It's the shit, people. So allow me to explain. Because it has been, frankly, very surprising to me in my circle of friends as I share my gleeful news, how few people understand the significance, why it works this way. Even published authors have been unclear on the concept. And one of the great takeaways of all of this has been, and I was having a conversation with another author friend of mine who is, you know, spent 30 years in corporate America in retail, and she understands marketing. She understands business. And sometimes it's really shocking how few authors, creatives, understand business and how business works. And it's not... I'm not throwing stones at you if it's that way, because clearly we did not get business degrees. She did. But most of us didn't go anywhere near the business school in college, right? This was not what we were about. I was in the science buildings, but still not business. And so it's unfortunate that creatives who very often end up being self-employed, freelancing, having to make business decisions, are the people who are like from the farthest end of the campus. You know, like at my campus, you know, both my undergraduate and my graduate school, the fine arts people were like way the flock down at the other end of campus from the business people. It was like never the twain shall meet, right? But if you are self-employed, if you are a freelancer, if you are a creative dealing with business people, then you've just got to learn business. You've got to know how these things work. So I've gotten this sort of wide variety of responses from people where they were like, how could you not know that it was going to be in hardback? Somebody even said, well, didn't your agent negotiate for that? Didn't you ask for that? So crash course in how this works with traditional publishing deals. When you sell the rights to a book to a publishing house, you sell what's called first world English rights. Hopefully that's all you're selling. If you're selling more than that, then you should be negotiating, right? Because you want to be able to have separate negotiations for your foreign rights. But let's just say you've sold first world English rights, and then they will have a list of all the formats that they are buying from you. Now, I was going to say 99% of the time. It used to be 99% of the time. It's gone down to like maybe 80% of the time, and we'll talk about why. But 80% of the time, they are buying all formats from you, and it will be listed out. It'll say hardback, trade paperback, mass market paperback, audio. They'll have listings for film and TV. Like if someone wants to buy the film rights, it goes through them. You still get paid, you know, like, and it's all broken out. It's like, you know, if we sell film rights and you get this percentage and we get this percentage and your agent gets this percentage, you know, it's all in there. But they do typically buy all formats. And it used to be that, like, that was just what you did. You sold all formats. The caveat here is that more and more publishing houses are starting to pick up very successful indie authors and arranging for only print or only audio with them. The savvy, and I'm going to, if you're listening, indie authors, the savvy indie author will not give up their ebooks because most indie authors make all their money on ebooks. But what a traditional publisher can get you if you have an already successful series is they can get you print distribution. They can pay for the audio recording. They can deal with the film rights, maybe deal with the foreign rights. But, so that's changed a little bit over time. So why didn't I know it was going to be in hardback? Because every single one of my traditionally published books has had the option to be in hardback. And so what happens, and this is especially true in the Big Five, where they are working with teams of people at stages of development, right? So my editor, you know, the one who decides to acquire the book, she might want hardback. She might want a really expensive author. She might want to take every marketing dollar that the publishing house has and use it to support my book, which she's also working on, right? But you have to remember that this is a business, right? It's a corporation. There are different departments. So what she has to do is she has to sell this to the other departments, and they have meetings. There's, you know, it's corporate America, right? So there's meetings and meetings, you know, so they meet with the sales team and the sales team looks at stuff. The sales team will read the books. They will maybe just read the summaries. You never know. People are busy, right? So there's people at all stages of production, starting with your editor who acquires the book. But then there's all these other people all the way down the line to the people at the bookstores who are buying the books. And they get feedback from those book buyers that, you know, like Barnes and Noble or what have you, where they look at it and they say, oh, you know, I don't think this book would move in my store. Or they say, oh, yeah, a new dark romance-y. You know, put it in hardcover and give me sprayed edges and I will sell the shit out of this. I haven't been in on those conversations, but you can imagine if you apply what you understand about other kinds of business, this is how it works. Bookstores, shockingly enough, are invested in selling books. And it's not that they want to, you know, like, they might support authors and they might support books, but they also want to keep the lights on and make money and be able to report to their higher ups that they are making a profit, right? So they want the significant hit. You know, they love that. That's great for them. It's great for all of us because it gets people in the bookstores. So, for example, my last traditionally published series was Forgotten Empires, that I did with St. Martin's. And the first book, The Orchid Throne, came out in 2019. It had a beautiful, beautiful cover, but it was not as expensive a cover as my editor had originally envisioned. Because even then, they did not understand how to position romantic fantasy. 5 years. It's just incredible that this change has come about. Maybe not incredible, but exciting, really. And I was talking with Grace Draven the other day about this, how it's kind of dizzying that this thing that we used to be like, so in the, I don't want to say in the doghouse, but we were in like the rearmost casita in the compound. We were way the flock on the other end of campus, right? You know, it was just, we were not a well-known, well-understood subgenre. And that's why there's so many names for it, you know, fantasy romance, epic fantasy romance, dark fantasy romance, romantic fantasy. There's all of these definitions and no one was really clear on what it is or how to position it. And so my editor at St. Martin's, who has since left, but she really wanted the, you know, she wanted a big splash for this book. They, you know, told me they wanted to break me out, you know, which means significant hit potential, right? They want to do that. But somewhere along the way, in these meetings that the authors don't attend, that it's like, you know, in-house meetings, the sales team or whoever those people are, they decided that it wasn't worth putting that kind of money into. It's expensive to produce a hardback. It's expensive to produce a paper, a trade paperback. I had to pause to sneeze. The pollen season is kicking up here. Yesterday and today on dog walk, I came back with, it's the juniper pollen. Huh, making me go. So, but at any rate, they ended up releasing the book in mass market paperback with a less expensive cover. They didn't have an artist do it. They didn't pay an artist, or much less the artist that my editor had picked out. They used more like, I don't want to say clip art, but stock art. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just the breaks. You don't know what they're going to do. So this time, somewhere in all those meetings, with they're saying, we think this has significant hit potential. Have I said that enough times? And they're going to bring it out in hardback, because that is what the romanticy readers are buying. They love collectors type hardbacks. But it's very good for me, because that means that they are putting money behind this book. It means that they're going to have it out there. They might have it on the end caps. I remember with one of my books a long time ago, my mom sent me a photo from the bookstore of an end cap, which is like that display, you know, that's like on the cardboard thing, and they have the books there. It's like not on the shelf, but at the end. Same thing with like the grocery store where they put all the Easter candy, that sort of thing. Bookstore, they have the end cap with the books. And she sent me this photo of an end cap with, you know, like that was all filled with, you know, all the copies of the exact same book with this gorgeous cover. And she said, how come they didn't do this for your book? Mother, that's why. It's like, I would love to have that. And now I'm going to get it. Oh, so I'm very excited. Never the Roses, Onira, the book I wasn't supposed to be writing. Just goes to show. So I want to talk just slightly about the term romanticy. I was interviewed yesterday by a gal writing an article, I believe, for Paste magazine. And so that forced me to articulate some of my thoughts. There have been a lot of conversation on social media. I know I've touched on it here, but, you know, like people have been talking about what is romanticy? How is it different from fantasy romance? And I don't know. Writers love to parse out the whole, especially indies, I think, you know, it's like, well, what should we call it? And does the book have to have this element and that element, but not this element, so that we could call it this? And, you know, people, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What somebody else, actually that same gal who's very good at business, asked me, she said, well, do traditionally published writers get to choose what genre their publisher labels their books as? And I said, ha-ha, no, they don't. No, they don't. And a lot of times we don't find out till we get the copy in our hand and you look on the spine and you see what they decided to call it. You know, there's some team in the publishing house there that decided, which is why Kensington called my books fantasy. They called them fantasy romance. St. Martin's called those books romantic fantasy. I think I'm writing pretty much the same thing. So romanticy, a portmanteau word that has been coming into use in the recent years. I think I first heard it a couple of years ago at Jennifer L. Armentrout's Apollycon, mostly coming out of the readership. That's one of the interesting things, is that this is a term coined by the readers. This is not the bookstores saying, you know, we have shelves for this, this, and this. It's not the publishing house stamping it on the spine, though they will start doing that because romanticy is hot. And I think it's actually a decent term because it incorporates a lot of subgenres. It incorporates fantasy romance and romantic fantasy and urban fantasy and or paranormal romance. It's basically romance and fantasy together. Give me both. Give me my peanut butter and my chocolate in my delicious Reese's peanut butter cup, and I shall be happy. I will even eat the knockoff brands of various kinds of chocolate and peanut butter together. So But one thing that occurred to me as I was writing this up, as often happens for me, which is probably why I'm an intuitive writer, is that romanticism has come up as a form of pushback against YA fantasy. Because for a very long time, these books have been called YA fantasy or young adult fantasy. Sarah J. Maas, her wildly popular books, called YA fantasy. There's so many. And there are many of us who have had these conversations that books written by women tend to be called YA, which is like this really interesting emanation of the patriarchy, that somehow if a woman writes a fantasy book, it becomes YA. It must be for a younger audience, because I don't know, our little brains can't encompass really complex fantasy. I can't even tell you. But it's weird, because even those of us who write decidedly adult, like yours truly, my books are adult, not just for like sexual content, but I have adult characters. Even my younger characters are still facing adult issues. I've never written YA in my life and probably won't. It's just, I don't have a YA voice. It's not my shtick. It doesn't have to be, but this has happened to so many writers of adult fantasy with romance and sex and kissing and all of that great stuff, that they get pigeonholed as YA and like invited to be on YA fantasy panels. And they're like, but I don't write YA fantasy. And they're like, oh no, it's okay. And I think everybody's tired of it because these books are not young adult. Some of them are, you know, it's great to have YA fantasy, but not all of these books are YA fantasy. So romanticy, great term, overarching term, YA fantasy is underneath that. And I'm kind of into it. I might start saying romanticy. So on that note, I hope you all have a great weekend, and I will talk to you all on Monday. You all take care. Bye-bye.